You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Requirements as it relates to firearms, that the actor and producers are responsible for the safety of others on set, for the safety of themselves and of others on set, that they are to treat a firearm as though it's always loaded. Do not point a firearm at another person.
I thought that was for the actor.
That is also, it's for both, Your Honor. These are set safety rules.
But what about...
So you're not even relying on that.
We are, Your Honor.
In your response, you said that you weren't talking about the SAG guidelines. You were talking about New Mexico law.
Well, Your Honor, I think that these are two different issues that are being conflated. So Mr. Baldwin is charged with involuntary manslaughter under New Mexico law. And how do we prove that? We prove that by demonstrating his conduct, not just on October 21st, but in the days leading up, that by violating these on-set movie set rules, that his conduct was reckless. Because it's not recklessness in a vacuum from...
You're talking about the gun, okay? So tell me what you think he did wrong as a producer.
So not just about the gun, Your Honor. So there are two, and that's why I wanted to address. There are two components here. So we have his conduct as it relates to the gun, but then his conduct as it relates to, for example, rushing the armorer to reload that gun. That goes to demonstrate his recklessness. There's no regard for the safety of other people. When you're rushing the armorer to reload this firearm, mistakes can happen. And so with regard to his producer role, there is evidence that will be presented that Mr. Baldwin, as a producer, should be aware of all of the safety regulations.
Okay, so I did have
trouble wrapping my head around this, as you can tell, okay?
I understand.
So the jury's going to hear this and they're going to go, well, Mr. Baldwin was the actor that was rushing, but he was also being a producer at the same time.
It goes to the recklessness. So he is a producer, and his contract states he's also the leading actor. So he's got a dual role, and with both roles, he fails in maintaining the safety of other people. See, what the defense is trying to do is just basically pigeonhole Mr. Baldwin as just an actor who relies on everybody else, and he relied on this armorer to not give him a gun with a live bullet. But his role as a producer requires him, there are more duties imposed on him as a producer. And those duties include, and there's expert testimony that will be presented, that his duties as a producer, well, I understand, Your Honor, but if the court allows the expert testimony, the state will present evidence that the defendant had not just his role as an actor, but as a producer, it's heightened in the sense that he is supposed to be aware of the regulations of the safety, and that's the most important thing.
Okay, I don't understand how you're going to say as a producer as an actor and a producer he shouldn't have said quick, move.
Well, but so as an actor, of course, he shouldn't have done that, but also as a producer, Your Honor, he is the boss. And as the boss, he is responsible for the safety of other people. So it goes to his state of mind, his willfulness, that he essentially, as the boss, failed the people who worked around him. And it gives him the power to control the safety. So as the producer, he has the power to control safety on set. And there was a tremendous lack of safety on this set. And so as the boss, he's emboldened to do whatever he wants to do. So this goes to the willfulness that the state has to prove.
Producer to do whatever he wants to do.
Because you're going to hear testimony from witnesses, if the court allows this, who will say he was the boss, he was calling the shots, he would rush people because without regard...
Maybe that's his personality as an actor.
Well, but that's irrelevant, Your Honor. With regard to his role as a producer, he has responsibilities, and he has a responsibility to maintain the safety of the set. Whereas an actor, perhaps those may be lessened, but as a producer, those are heightened. And so it's relevant to demonstrate his willfulness, the willfulness of his conduct, that on October 21st, he once again disregarded the safety of Ms. Hutchins and Mr. Souza and pointed that gun directly at Ms. Hutchins. And so that is why this is relevant. We can't look at this in a vacuum. And in fact, the court in State versus Duncan noted that relevance does not exist in a vacuum. Instead, it's the logical relationship between evidence and a proposition and issue that the party seeks to prove. We have to prove willfulness. We have to prove recklessness. So in order to do that, the fact that he was a producer and the boss is absolutely relevant.
Well, let me ask something. So in the involuntary manslaughter, with respect to the first negligent use of a deadly weapon, okay? That's not the producer. That's the actor.
That is the actor, but he's also charged in the alternative.
In the alternative, he failed to check the gun.
It's more than that.
That is what was given to the grand jury, that he failed to check the gun and pointed a loaded gun at a person. That's what it was in the grand jury. So you want the producer aspect. You want to introduce that he was the producer and what he was required to do to be able to prove that alternative theory that he was supposed to check the gun.
Well, and that he wasn't supposed to point it at another human being and to pull the trigger. And so, and as a producer...
As a producer, he wasn't supposed to do that?
Well, his role as a producer goes to what he is required to know when it comes to safety of others. He has a responsibility to ensure the safety of other people. So it goes to the issue of his willfulness, that on October 21st, when he points that gun at Ms. Hutchins, he should know that as a producer, he's responsible for her safety, because that is one of the things that producers are responsible for, safety on set. And so the fact that there was a lack of safety on this set, Mr. Baldwin should have known that by his action of what he did moments leading up to the shooting of Ms. Hutchins, essentially show a willful disregard for her safety and recklessness. So it's not a theory of prosecution. It is evidence that goes to prove an element of the offense. And we would respectfully ask that the court allow the introduction of the fact that he was a producer and that as a producer he has obligations to ensure the safety of others.
And who's going to be your expert witness on that?
May I have a moment, Your Honor, to confirm? So we have two witnesses. Mr. Carpenter, who testified before the grand jury. In fact, he testified about the producer role. And then Kent Jorgensen, who is one of the individuals involved in drafting and updating the safety bulletins for on-set safety.
You know that Brian Carpenter was not an expert admitted as a producer in Hannah Gutierrez. He was a firearm expert. And he has not been admitted as an expert because there was no judge to get him to be an expert at the grand jury. So he has not, at this point, been admitted as an expert, as a producer.
Right, and we would tender him. Obviously, the court will have to do its gatekeeping duty and role. Mr. Jorgensen, however, and in fact, I think there's a motion pending about Mr. Jorgensen, but Mr. Jorgensen is also an expert on this. He's familiar with what the safety guidelines require of producers and of actors. And so these are germane issues that the state is required to prove, and we'd ask that the court allow the state to introduce this evidence.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I hardly know where to begin because I honestly don't understand the theory or the facts that they intend to articulate to demonstrate that on October 21st, Alec Baldwin, the actor, committed involuntary manslaughter. They said, well, the safety bulletins explain that. Two things. Number one, they already said in their response that the safety bulletins weren't violated, New Mexico law was. Number two, look at those safety bulletins carefully. I'm sure Your Honor's read them many times. They say nothing about the producer not pointing the gun. They say the exclusive responsibility of gun safety is on the prop master, the armorer, the first assistant director. Doesn't say anything about a producer. There are a number of actors doing the same exact thing that was required by the safety guidelines. Those are SAG guidelines for actors, armorers, the first assistant director, and the prop master. They say, well, maybe it's because Mr. Baldwin was rushing before October 21st, and there as a producer, I'm not sure what that distinction is, producer, actor, and therefore on the 21st he was. But you just excluded the evidence of him rushing because that's propensity evidence. That's inappropriate. The fact that we're so confused about what the theory actually is goes directly to the prejudice that will far outweigh the probative nature of this testimony. And we'll get into Mr. Jorgensen and Mr. Carpenter later, unless Your Honor wants to hear about why they're not qualified to testify as experts on producers. I'm sure we can push that on. But the reality is this will confuse the jury. This will be highly prejudicial. They want to show that he's the boss, and therefore on October 21st, as an actor, he committed involuntary manslaughter. That is highly prejudicial, inappropriate evidence, should be excluded.
All right, so what I think is more appropriate is I'm going to revisit this, make my ruling, no more argument on it, but I think that we should do Well, you didn't raise Mr. Carpenter except duplicative testimony, and
that's just the cumulative expert test motion, Your Honor. That's correct. We raised Jorgensen.
Right.
If you want to do Jorgensen now, I'm happy to come back up and talk about Jorgensen.
All right. Let's do Jorgensen.
Okay. Now, the state intends to offer Mr. Jorgensen on two issues. One is the role of a producer in managing the safety of the set, and the second is the safety bulletins that govern actors on movie sets. Mr. Jorgensen should be excluded. First things first, on the evidence of producer, his opinions on producer. Mr. Jorgensen has never been a producer in his life. He was a camera grip back 25, 30 years ago. Never been a producer. We asked him, what is the basis for your testimony as to what producers do, know, what their obligations are on a movie set? He said, well, it's because I get to sit at the kids' table, these are his words, and listen to the adults talking. Your Honor, this is not the kids' table. This is the adults' table. Mr. Jorgensen has absolutely no expertise, and sitting at the kids' table doesn't allow him to sit over there and give testimony about what it is a producer is required to do on a movie set in a criminal trial on involuntary manslaughter, number one. With respect to the safety standards, Mr. Jorgensen didn't draft the safety standards. He's not a gun expert. He was a camera grip. Sets up camera angles and scaffolding, etc. He is not a gun expert. He's not an armor. He's never been a prop master. He's never been a first assistant director with the safety obligations. His role, as he described it, is administrative. They want to draft safety guidelines. Mr. Jorgensen says, I'm going to go find gun experts. I'm going to delegate the drafting of safety bulletins to gun experts. They're going to draft it. Not Jorgensen, the gun experts are. And then the gun experts are going to send it back, and Jorgensen wordsmiths and edits. But it's the gun experts who determine gun safety standards on movie sets, not Mr. Jorgensen. He has no basis to offer an expert opinion about gun safety standards, what the standards mean, how they're supposed to apply, because he didn't draft them. He's not the expert. He doesn't know anything about them other than how they got drafted. But how they got drafted is not an issue. In this case, his evidence, his opinion should be excluded.
Your Honor, Mr. Jorgensen teaches producers about their responsibilities with regard to set safety. He's going to take the witness stand. He can outline his experience, the position that he holds that allows him, that puts him in the position where he teaches producers about set safety. So I want to be clear. I am not calling Mr. Jorgensen so that he can come and just generally talk about this is what a producer does. I am calling Mr. Jorgensen to come in and talk about the producer's responsibility with regard to set safety. And Mr. Jorgensen is acutely familiar with this because he actually teaches producers what their responsibilities are and how they can have a safe set and avoid getting sued for killing someone. So we've got that as the first issue. Mr. Jorgensen is indeed one of the people who drafts the safety bulletins. I'm not sure where the confusion came in. Mr. Jorgensen is the chairman of the it's on the tip of my tongue, the industry-wide labor relations, it's on my computer, my apologies. So in that role, what Mr. Jorgensen does is, here's how it works. Representatives from all of the different film unions come together. So we've got somebody from the Directors Guild, and somebody from the Producers Guild, and somebody from IATSE, and that's who Mr. Jorgensen is. They all get together and they agree and draft these safety bulletins. Mr. Jorgensen is one of those people who sits at the table who drafts these safety bulletins. So his testimony is entirely relevant, one, because he actually drafts the rules that Mr. Baldwin is required to follow, whether we're talking about him as a producer or an actor or anything. And number two, Mr. Jorgensen sits with people from the Producers Guild of America to sit and discuss these safety bulletins and whose responsibility is what, in addition to teaching producers how to do this. So I think that his testimony is absolutely relevant with regard to these are the safety bulletins. He lays a foundation for the safety bulletins. These are how the safety bulletins are created. This is a safety bulletin. This safety bulletin says, don't point a gun at anyone. Keep your finger off the trigger. Assume that anything that you point the gun at will be destroyed. Those are the safety bulletins that Mr. Jorgensen participates in developing. So his testimony is wholly relevant. Now, whether or not the court decides that Mr. Jorgensen's testimony with regard to a producer's responsibility as it goes to set safety is something that I think the court it has indicated that you may want to reserve ruling on until you see and experience how the trial is unfolding. But there's no question that Mr. Jorgensen gets to come in and testify about the safety bulletins that he himself participates in drafting. Thank you.
Just a few points, Your Honor. The fact that Mr. Jorgensen is allowed to teach at some university about how people shouldn't get sued in civil cases, it doesn't make him an expert in this court. He's never been a producer. He's not an expert in being a producer. The kids' table doesn't allow him to sit at the adults' table, period, full stop. He also is not a gun expert, didn't draft it. They're going to have Mr. Carpenter come and testify about safety standards with respect to using the weapon, pointing it, not pointing it. Now they want a cumulative expert, Mr. Jorgensen, who doesn't actually develop the guidelines. He's not the gun expert. He admitted that. He doesn't develop the standards. He said, I hire gun experts to draft those standards. They're going to have two experts, one of whom clearly not qualified on gun safety, Mr. Jorgensen, testify, and then put Carpenter in too. This is an afternoon, a day of testimony of cross. We already have a short schedule, Your Honor. You should limit this testimony. He's not qualified to give opinions on these issues.
Thank you. The court makes the following ruling. The court will accept Mr. Kent Jorgensen to be able to testify before the jury as to what the SAG guidelines say, but he has no qualifications to opine on what a producer does. He doesn't know how a producer implements those guidelines. So he can say these are the guidelines, but he needs to be a producer to say this as a producer. This is how I thought. This is how I meet these requirements. The other thing noteworthy about Mr. Jorgensen is that based upon his pretrial interview, which is what would have been the time to let the defendant know what he was going to testify about, he was all over the place. And basically, he was like, well, I relied on Ross. I didn't talk to anybody. So, he will have hypotheticals about, and he may sit over there in the gallery while he's listen so that he can opine, but I think that interview indicated on top of it that my finding that he's not qualified to know what a producer does. So he can testify about the SAG guidelines, but he cannot opine on whether what Mr. Baldwin did as a producer was good or bad. All right. I'm going to revisit the producer. I'm going to make the following finding. I'm having real difficulty with the state's position that they want to show that as a producer he didn't follow guidelines, and therefore as an actor Mr. Baldwin did all these things wrong, resulting in the death of Helena Hutchins, because as a producer he allowed this all to happen. I think that when you look at the relevancy, I think that one of the reasons why I think I'm having a hard time wrapping my hand around it, to be able to say, Mr. Baldwin, because he was a producer and he was the boss, although there are more than one producer, and he couldn't do anything without, if looking at those contracts, he couldn't do a thing without running it by, including hiring somebody, without running it by whatever that entity is in the contract. But I do not believe that it has any tendency to make more probable than it would be without the fact that Mr. Baldwin individually as an actor committed involuntary manslaughter through negligent use of a deadly weapon and the alternative theory. The probative value is not substantially outweighed by unfair prejudice and certainly confusion of issues to the jury. So I'm denying evidence of his status as a producer. All right, shall we continue? All right, so we're going to the states now. That was Mr. Baldwin's motion. We have Jorgensen, we finished. All right. State's motion eliminating number 6 to preclude accusations of prosecutorial misconduct.
Your Honor, unfortunately in this case, or this case has been fraught with numerous accusations of prosecutorial misconduct. And they were raised in the context of motions to dismiss for constitutional violations. They were raised in the context of motions to dismiss the grand jury indictment. The court has ruled on those. Those allegations were perhaps relevant to those legal motions, but they're not relevant to what the jury is required to find. So I would respectfully submit, Your Honor, that the court preclude the defense from making arguments to the jury about prosecutorial misconduct and that the state did X, Y, or Z and it was unethical or improper, because that, number one, is irrelevant. Number two, it would be more prejudicial than probative. It also invites jury nullification. And that would be the main issue I would submit to the court, that the defense would be introducing this. And I noted on page 4 of the motion the allegations, for example, that obviously the jury's going to hear about the accidental discharge test that resulted in the damage to two internal components of that firearm. But to argue to the jury that that resulted in a constitutional violation to the defendant's rights is improper. The court has ruled on that motion. There have been numerous allegations of discovery violations and disclosures, and that they were designed to prevent the defendant from receiving a fair trial. Again, those are legal issues that the court is going to be deciding and has decided and have no place before the jury. That the prosecution conspired with law enforcement to intentionally damage this firearm, again, that went to the Trombetta motion that the court has already ruled on. There's another issue that there was a meeting you heard about in the motion hearing that Lucian Haig, had a virtual meeting with Mr. Ziegler from the FBI where counsel were present. And during that meeting, he asked Mr. Ziegler how he conducted the accidental discharge test. Now, while that is a proper area of inquiry for cross-examination, any implication that that was improper or unethical should be precluded, because under Rule 703, experts can confer with other experts in forming their final opinion. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so I had to bring this motion to the court, Your Honor, because I am concerned that there will be, throughout this trial, numerous allegations that the state has engaged in misconduct and in trying to deprive the defendant of his right to a fair trial, and those have no place before the jury, and we'd ask that the court preclude that.
Let me just be clear about what we intend to do and what we don't intend to do. This is not going to be a trial about the ethics of the prosecutors. It's not going to be a trial about they should have dismissed the case a long time ago. They did. They took it back. Well, none of that's coming into this trial. No intention. What we intend to do is exactly what I discussed we were going to do with Schilling, for example. We're allowed to demonstrate that bias, improper motive, incompetence of the government investigation. We're allowed to attack the credibility of witnesses as it relates to the government investigation. For example, Your Honor already ruled that with respect to that meeting between Mr. Ziegler and Mr. Haig, that gets to be disclosed to the jury. In fact, the prosecutors are required to disclose it to the jury, you ruled. And so all of that goes back to the black letter law that we started with on that prior motion in limine. We're allowed to demonstrate the bias, the incompetence, the improper motivations. We're allowed to attack credibility. We're allowed to attack the fact that the FBI destroyed this gun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those issues are fair game, Hornbook law. We intend to introduce that. The state shouldn't be allowed to preclude it. I have nothing further, Your Honor. It's black letter law.
Thank you. Any reply?
Just briefly, Your Honor, I think we may be in agreement. What the reason for this motion was essentially to preclude the defense from essentially making personal attacks and allegations of prosecutorial misconduct. We agree, and we will present evidence about the Ziegler-Haig virtual meeting, about the gun. But we just ask, given the contentious nature of this case so far, that we focus on the evidence and not on allegations, personal allegations, and attacks during this trial.
All right, thank you. The court rules and reasons. The court agrees that the prosecutor's misconduct as alleged by the defendant in his pretrial motions may not be brought out at trial. The misconduct is not relevant evidence, and even if it were, its probative value is substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice and confusing the issues. However, to the extent that the defense may elicit evidence about the Santa Fe County's investigation, the FBI testing, the Haig's three reports, and his meeting with Ziegler, this evidence is relevant as it makes a fact more or less probable, and the fact is of consequence in the action. And weighing it, the probative value of the evidence is substantially outweighed by danger of unfair prejudice, etc. All right. Thank you. Now we're going to, let me just back up and do these two that... State's motion in limine number 4. Let me just make sure I haven't missed one. Okay. State's motion in limine number 4, which is no reference to the potential punishment in the case.
There's no issue.
All right. So that's agreed, stipulated. State's motion limine number 5 to prohibit the defense from arguing to the jury examples of the definition of reasonable doubt.
No present intention to do so. I don't know. We'll discuss reasonable doubt, but those random hypotheticals, I don't think the court should preclude the defense from arguing anything that they choose to when you decide the law, as long as it's relevant. But we have no present intention.
You're not going to give them an example of reasonable doubt, okay?
Yeah, I have no present intention to do that.
Okay, and that doesn't come up, and that doesn't come up in voir dire either. Okay. We've got defendant's motion in limine number 4 to preclude improper expert testimony from lay witnesses.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state wants to admit evidence from the camera grip, for example, about how dummies are made, safety standards for armors on set, safety standards for producers, etc. The camera grip. It wants to have the medic testify about the standards for armorers on set. This is improper opinion testimony that can only be given by an expert, not by a lay witness. The state cites the State versus Vargas case, Your Honor. They say it's a two-part test. Part number one is, can the lay witness testify about it based on personal observation? Part number two, can the lay witness rationally connect their personal observation to the opinion testimony. They say they can, because the medic has been on movie sets, it's personal observation. What the state overlooks is that before Vargas states that two-part test, it actually addresses a third one. That's the third prong of Rule 701, which says a lay witness cannot give testimony if it's within scientific, technical, or specialized knowledge. So Vargas says, testifying about movie standards, safety standards, armor standards, how dummies are made, the things that the camera grip and the medic, they want them to testify about, are within the specialized knowledge of someone on a movie set. As Vargas put it, it has to be only within the common experience and knowledge of a lay person. Now, how do we know that that testimony is not within the common experience and knowledge of a lay person? Because the state says so in its other motions. And I brought my notes up here so I can get the language exactly right. In one of its in limine motions, with respect to the cumulative expert testimony, that's motion in limine number 8, here's what the state says. Many people, like many jurors, are not at all familiar with safety protocols on movie sets. And many of the state's experts are being called to educate the jury with regard to safe practices and movie sets. On the Jorgensen motion that we just went over, Your Honor, let me read from that one too. Safety bulletins and protocols on the use and handling of firearms on a movie set, as well as movie production requirements to ensure a safe working environment, are not within the average layperson's knowledge. They try to admit Mr. Carpenter's testimony on that too. They say this is specialized knowledge, expert testimony. They try to get experts in on it, but then they try to say it's just lay opinion testimony that the medic can offer, the camera grip can offer. They cannot have it both ways, Your Honor. And in fact, Vargas reversed a conviction when the court allowed that evidence. That was a police detective who was allowed to testify about his experience with a stun gun, how it was used, how it was made, etc. And the court allowed that at the trial level. The defendant said that's lay opinion testimony that doesn't satisfy that third prong. It has to be tested under Rule 702. The appellate court said, you're right, reverse conviction. That was an expert testifying because the average and common experience is not that of a detective. And so it had to go through the gateway of 702. The state has not offered, has not disclosed Ms. Schaefer, Mr. Looper, or any of the other witnesses on this set as expert witnesses. They never made that expert disclosure. And to the extent they did, we would have obviously filed an in limine motion to exclude them as experts. They weren't offered as one, so we filed it this way, as experts, because the medic doesn't have the expertise to testify about armor standards, or the camera grip doesn't have the expertise to testify about movie production requirements. We just went through that with Jorgensen. And so this is lay opinion testimony that violates Rule 701, that has not been offered under 702 or met the guidelines of 702, and therefore any witness that they want to testify about any issue outside of what they observed on Rust, what they saw on other movie sets, what armors do on other movie sets, what actors do on other movie sets, is improper opinion testimony that should be excluded when it's offered by these lay witnesses. Thank you, Your Honor.
If I were the defense, I'd want this testimony excluded also. And let me tell you why it's relevant. Mr. Baldwin, part of his defense, and he's made these statements repeatedly, is, I had no reason to think that Hannah Gutierrez wasn't a good armorer. I had no reason to think there was a problem here. This is what he says. He called Jason Bowles' office himself and said, I never had a problem with your client. I never had a reason to think that she wasn't a stellar professional. Well, Judge, you're actually in a unique position because you sat through the Gutierrez trial and you saw and heard the other people, the other crew members who worked on that set come in and say, we knew immediately this lady wasn't following the proper safety protocols. How do we know that? Because Ross Odiego has worked on 60 to 100 films and TV shows. Same thing with Lane Looper. Same thing with Sherilyn Schaefer. She's the set medic. She's paying attention to what's going on with regard to safety. These are not people who are being called as experts to come in and talk about set safety. These are people who are going to come in and say, We had safety concerns on this movie set because we knew from our experience, and by the way, this gentleman was the most experienced person on set, Mr. Baldwin. So if these other folks who had slightly less experience than him had concerns about whether or not Ms. Gutierrez was doing her job properly, this is the way that the state gets to combat the defense of there was absolutely nothing wrong with her. She was an amazing, stellar professional. This court knows that is absolutely untrue. So it is perfectly appropriate for lay witnesses to come in and say, I've been working on movie sets for the last 15 years or 20 years, or in Mr. Baldwin's case, 40 years. And I know exactly how these safety protocols work. And here's what makes it a little bit unique on a movie set, is that the safety protocols that take place between the armorer and the actor and the first assistant director is this thing that happens out in the open, where the armorer says to all of the crew members, all of these people who are going to come in and testify, hey, does anybody want to see the rounds? Does anybody want to come and see me load the gun? Because you're the people who are standing potentially in the way. So all of these crew members actually get to participate in the safety check, even though he's a dolly grip, as though there's something wrong with being a dolly grip. Even though someone is a first assistant cameraman or a boom operator, they actually get to participate in that safety check because it is their lives that are at risk. So each and every one of these people should absolutely be able to come in and say, I noticed that Hannah Gutierrez wasn't doing her job because Mr. Baldwin has told everyone Hannah Gutierrez was a stellar professional. We're not asking them for a bunch of technical knowledge. Absolutely am I. I will tell the court I am not asking any of these witnesses to come in and talk about the difference between dummy rounds and blank rounds. Absolutely not. These witnesses are coming in to talk about, in part, their safety concerns as it related to Mr. Baldwin's conduct and the conduct of Hannah Gutierrez. And we can't really separate those two out because Mr. Baldwin's defense is she was really good. I would also point the court to, this is Farner versus, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Pakar. This is a federal case, 562 Fed 2nd 518. The admission of the lay witness's opinion that the Pakar suspension system was improperly designed due to its failure to incorporate the safety chains was affirmed by the Court of Appeals. Much like the federal courts have allowed lay opinion testimony based on the witness's particular knowledge gained from their employment experiences, keeping in mind this is their workplace, so too should this court. There's a case right on point. Thank you.
Few issues, Your Honor. I'll talk about the cases first, and we'll go back to what Ms. Morrissey said she's going to try to use these witnesses for, and that's expert testimony. The Farner case, it's a design defect case. Farner was driving a truck. The truck suspension failed. There was an accident. Someone died. His widow, he did, and the person in the passenger seat. His widow sued the company that built the truck. She got a person who had driven, his name was Curtis, driven the same exact truck before. Not the same one in the accident, but the same exact make, model, etc. And he said, I drove that same truck. And you fix that design defect by wrapping these chains around the suspension. It was a design defect case where the question was, is that design defect fixable? This was an expert testimony. This was fact testimony. The same with the other cases, the Kate cites, the Valencia case, the Munoz case. Those are cases where the people worked at the company that was at issue in the fraud. And they were asked about that very company when you worked there at the company. What'd you experience? What'd you see? That's relevant to the fraud. They didn't come in and say, I worked at some totally different company. And my experience at that different company, I'm going to apply it here. That's not at all what happened in that case. This case is Vargas, based on the experience that these witnesses had in other movies. Ms. Morrissey told you, they want to say, I've been involved in 40 movies before, and applying my experience there to this one, these are the safety problems I had. Even though there's A, that's expert testimony, because it falls right under that third prong. And number two, it is testimony that they are not qualified to give. There's nothing wrong with being a camera grip, Your Honor. There's something wrong with being a camera grip and testifying about the safety bulletins for armors. That's exactly what 701 and 702 say, and Vargas says, it's reversible to allow it to happen. I have nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, the court makes the following ruling. A lay witness can testify if rationally based on perception, helpful to clarifying an understanding of the witness's testimony or determining a fact and issue, and is not based on scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge. Particularized knowledge is acceptable here, although I don't find it here on what they intend to do. Lay witness testimony of what they observed on set, providing that it's relevant as compared to what they saw on other sets, makes a fact more probable than it would be without this evidence, and the fact is of consequence in determining the action. That is criminal negligence. It's they are not going to testify about the safety bulletins. They can only testify about what they observed on set, in this set, and what they observed on other sets, provided that they have a sufficient history to do so. However, again, we're going to have to decide relevance. Okay.
Understood.
All right. Court wants to take a bathroom break. All right, let's be back here at 15:15. Okay? All right, thank you. We're in recess.
Your Honor, if I may briefly?
Yes.
Just at the end of the last motion, you noted in passing before we broke that issues with respect to lay opinion testimony would raise relevance concerns or relevance issues. And I just wanted to get some guidance on the court from that, because we anticipate, for example, the medic, as I said, camera grip. We also anticipate people testifying that a few of the other actors on set did their own safety checks, even though those actors said they didn't think it to be their duty. And so
the last part of what you just said.
Sure. Let me approach, Your Honor, so you can use the lectern so you can hear me better.
Me?
Is that better, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. And so at the end of the last motion, you noted that issues with respect to lay opinion testimony would raise questions of relevance. And it'd be helpful to get Your Honor's guidance on that, because we anticipate the medic testifying, the camera grip testifying about issues that, for example, were not reported to Mr. Baldwin, so don't go to his state of mind, or certain witnesses testifying about what a few of the other actors did on the set with respect to checking their guns, when those actors themselves said, but it's not an actor's duty. And so we want to make sure that those issues are not introduced, for example, in an opening statement, when ultimately it will be proven, in our view, to be irrelevant to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind, what another actor may or may not have done under the safety guidelines, or what the medic thought about the set but kept in her head and didn't report to anybody. Obviously, that wouldn't relate to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind without the reporting, or at least there's a question about prejudice outweighing the probative value of that when it goes to state of mind. And so it'd be helpful to get Your Honor's guidance on that with respect to these issues before opening, at least. And we can submit more papers if you'd like.
No,
or
I don't want that
paper. I assume not, Your Honor, but that's why I'm raising it here orally versus submitting something to you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Does the state wish to reply?
Just briefly, Your Honor. So part of the defense here is this was Hannah Gutierrez's job. This is Hannah Gutierrez's fault. The truth is, Hannah Gutierrez wasn't doing her job properly, and everybody seemed to notice it except for the defendant. So it's true. We do intend to have witnesses say, I had concerns about the way that firearm safety was being conducted on set. In terms of whether or not it's relevant that other actors perform their own safety checks, I think probably just depends on how the evidence develops. I think my very first meeting with Mr. Nickus, one of the things that he explained to me is that there's a scene in the movie where the actor Travis Fimmel holds his gun to the back of the neck of the child actor. He's got his finger on the trigger and he's got the gun cocked. And Mr. Nika said, Travis Fimmel would never have done that unless unless he felt safe with these firearms, unless he thought that these firearms were completely safe. Well, cut to reality now. The truth of the matter is that Travis Fimmel was one of the guys who every single time Hannah Gutierrez handed him a gun, took the gun, and dry-fired it into the ground more than six times to ensure that he tested every single chamber in the gun. So certainly, if part of the defense becomes these other people pointed guns at each other and it wasn't a big deal, then obviously it becomes highly relevant that these other actors felt free to do it, because whether it was their obligation under the safety bulletins or not, they understood that that was a smart thing to do, especially when you've got this armorer who doesn't seem to know what she's doing.
All right, thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Just some clarity, Your Honor, because what I think would be helpful, both so we can get the court's guidance and so we can understand what kind of case they're putting on, if they give an offer of proof of these issues. Because, for example, if the medic comes in and says, you know, I had safety concerns about on set, that's an opinion about the set that wasn't communicated. It's not to say she can't say, I saw Ms. Gutierrez running around, I saw her doing this, she was moving quickly. Those are facts. We're not trying to get out facts unless they turn out to be more prejudicial than probative, unconnected to state of mind. But her opinion about the safety of the set, that should not be included. That's irrelevant.
She doesn't get to do opinion. I already ruled that.
Exactly, Your Honor. And so what we just heard from Ms. Morrissey is, well, maybe it's relevant that an actor checked the gun on set in a different way from Mr. Baldwin, or he checked the gun at all. Maybe it's not. And so to actually get guidance from Your Honor so we know what this case looks like when we're going into opening statement, having an open order, having an offer of proof on these issues, I think will make sure that we don't end up having irrelevant testimony included, that we don't end up in the middle of opening talking about something that the state is or is not going to do with respect to these important evidentiary issues.
All right. So to the extent of looking, I don't think I can't remember the people that testified in Hannah Gutierrez, but one was somebody that walked off the job, okay? And I think he has a pending...
Lane Looper, Your Honor, yes.
Hmm? He did not testify during Gutierrez, Mr. Nicholson.
Lane Looper walked off the job.
Well, somebody that was like the head camera guy walked out and looked at Ms. Morris because we were in the case. But so if he were to testify that I left the job because of safety concerns, it has to be related to what you're trying to prove. So it would have to be related to Hannah Gutierrez. I'm not sure that's off the top of my head, that it would have to be related to Hannah Gutierrez and them observing that this armor was doing a sloppy job, and when they observed other armors, just pretty much what they testified to before. But if they're going to say things like nothing that would speak to him as a producer cannot come in.
Understood.
So if you're going to say, look, this person was sloppily handling the weapon and it doesn't relate to Hannah Gutierrez, then that's producer. That's not actor. Am I being clear on that?
I'm a little confused.
I don't know. I don't remember the scene that you used, but let me just say this. So you're saying, you know, that this actor had to check because he didn't trust Hannah Gutierrez. Okay, that's Hannah Gutierrez. Okay, but let's say the shooting, Sarah Zachary. Okay, when she shot, there were two, and Sarah Zachary shot on the ground or something like that. You would have to tie that to Hannah Gutierrez because that's producer issue.
So let me see if I can help out a little bit in terms of narrowing this down. I do not intend to put witnesses on the witness stand and have them say, generally, I felt unsafe on this movie set. I intend to have witnesses say, these are the things that I saw with regard to the handling of firearms that caused me to feel concerned. And in terms of an offer of proof, all Mr. Nickus has to do is just go read the transcripts from the Gutierrez trial that he's been shoving down my throat for the last 5 months, because that's what I'm intending to have the witnesses testify to. This is what I saw, and this made me feel uncomfortable, and it goes directly to the defendant's defense of not my job, she was great. I had no reason
yes,
to doubt.
But it has to be related that Hannah Gutierrez's Agreed. Job is an armorer. You can't just say, I felt unsafe because people were screwing around with guns. Because that might not be related to Hannah Gutierrez.
I agree with you. It has to be related to Hannah Gutierrez, or it has to be related to Mr. Baldwin's handling of firearms, which is directly relevant. I agree with you absolutely.
And one clarification there, Your Honor. October 8th, 9th, for example, Mr. Baldwin's not there. If someone testifies on the 8th, I saw Hannah do X and Y and Z, and I felt very unsafe based on what she did, they not only have to connect it to Hannah, respectfully, but they also have to connect that to Mr. Baldwin. Because if Mr. Baldwin didn't see it, then this comes back to the imputed producer theory. He must have known safety issues on the set on the 8th, but they haven't demonstrated that, and they have to demonstrate that to have any relevance to his state of mind.
Well, I'd have to hear what it was.
Of course, Your Honor, but that's an example. If a witness comes in and says, on the 8th, when Mr. Baldwin was not there, I saw Hannah Reed do something quickly or act unsafe, that relates to Hannah, but it's not relevant to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind or his knowledge of Hannah. If they say on the 20th, I saw Hannah acting carelessly, here's what she did, she moved real quickly, Mr. Baldwin was there, he saw that, then that's fair game. That's my point.
Well, what you're saying is that the state can only introduce evidence that Mr. Baldwin was aware of, and I'm not sure that's correct.
If they're going to show that there was a safety issue on set with respect to Hannah Gutierrez on October 8th that Mr. Baldwin did not see or know about?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because the other way you could do this is that he was, with respect to, for example, David Halls, he said, well, he periodically checked the gun. And I'm not sure whether there was some kind of, I don't know how to put this, some understanding about how she was doing things that could be cumulative. I don't know. I would have to figure that out when it's offered. Sorry.
No, the context is going to matter here, Your Honor. I just wanted to flag this issue because seeing the transcript in the Gutierrez trial, we did see the state try to introduce some of this, and we want to make sure it's connected to Mr. Baldwin.
We do not want a trial within a trial.
Precisely.
That's for sure.
Yes, Your Honor.
But we also want the state to be able to address that, their theory that he should have checked the gun.
Understood, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hope that was helpful.
It was.
Okay.
And it'll come up and we'll ask
yes,
for more
absolutely.
Guidance when it comes
okay.
up more precisely.
Right. Okay.
I think I'd probably stand here, Your Honor, right? We've got the next in the
yes,
day.
Yes, we do. Okay.
On inconsistent statements. Is that right?
No. Oh, yes. No. We already did the lay witnesses. This is motion limiting 5. Previous contradict the state's. Let me use my list.
I think that's right, Your Honor.
Okay, we've done their 6. Got to their 6. And
their 7, I believe.
So, no.
Or 5 and 6, I'm sorry. So
okay,
we're back
that's
to 5.
Right. Let's see. So we're on 5. Okay. Defendant Alec Baldwin's motion in limine to preclude argument and testimony that contradict the state's previous factual assertions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'll make this brief. In the Gutierrez trial, the state made a handful of important statements that relate to what Mr. Baldwin did or did not have an obligation to do, or the cause of the underlying harm. For example, said Hannah Gutierrez Reed is the autonomous decision maker, or if Hannah Gutierrez Reed had checked the gun again, it wouldn't have made a difference. Or the training or not of Mr. Baldwin with respect to the gun is not why Ms. Hutchins died. It's because of Hannah Gutierrez Reed, and so forth and so on. We put them in the brief, Your Honor. Those statements contradict a number of different elements of how the state has argued this case in the past. And we expect that those will contradict how the state intends to present its case this time. Two things. Number one, the case law is clear that the obligation of the prosecutor is to pursue the truth and not convictions, if there's a difference between them. And so the case law recognizes that it violates due process for a prosecutor to present contradictory theories across two trials that relate to the same matter. Now, they're not bound by the precise theory or the precise factual underlying theory, legal or otherwise. The cases they cite are cases like Frye, where there are two defendants. The government doesn't know who actually shot the gun and killed the victim. And so it puts on a trial saying this one did and then this one did, because the government doesn't know. Those aren't internally contradictory.
Can I interrupt for a second? Aren't you rehashing what has already been done?
We're not, Your Honor, because the case law is clear. We can use those statements as party admissions. For example, look at the Bradshaw case.
Just a minute. First of all, that's not in your brief.
It is, Your Honor.
No, just a minute. You're not going to be able to argue what Ms. Morrissey said as a statement of what the prosecutor said in that case. There's a case, I thought this might come up, and I should have pulled that case, but Justice Chavez did it, and it's contrary to U.S. Court case or federal court, because it doesn't allow that in.
You know, there are two different issues here. One is, does it violate due process to do it? And the other is, are we allowed to present the state's contradictory statements?
Okay, so I already ruled it didn't violate due process.
Right, and so on the second, and that's what the cases say, that's what Your Honor's referring to. And the case, in the Bradshaw case that the state cites in its brief, it says, look at Justice Thomas's concurrence. Justice Thomas said the Supreme Court has not ruled on and he wouldn't support a due process violation. Mm-hmm. But then you have to continue reading that concurrence that the state cites. Justice Thomas says, if the prosecutor makes inconsistent statements, that risks undermining his case because the defense counsel can present those contradictions to the fact finder, quote unquote, or close enough, to the Thomas concurrence. And in that concurrence, Justice Thomas says, involving two different defendants, agrees with Justice Souter, says the defendant in the second trial can present those contradictory statements that were made by the state in the first trial to the fact finder, and the fact finder can weigh those inconsistencies as it will. The state does not cite, and that's directly from the Thomas concurrence that the state cites. We're not saying due process. We do argue that. We want to preserve that. But we should be able to present, in fact, their own case says we're allowed to present those inconsistencies. On top of that, the state does not cite a single case, not one, that says we're not allowed to present those contradictions in this case. Not a single case. They say it'd be prejudicial. But, A, their statements, clear as day, what they said.
Let me find this case, because it went to this. But, okay, I'm listening. All right.
And they say 403. Mm-hmm. But, Your Honor, they don't cite a single case that actually allows them to say X in one trial and then show up in a related trial and say not X or contradicts X. And we're allowed to present that. That's their own Thomas concurrence. In the U.S. versus Small case, for example, that talks about 403 and prejudice, says extraordinary remedy. They don't cite a single case for it, and they're asking for an extraordinary remedy, and all we're asking for is that the statements that this own prosecution made in this court, as an officer of this court, as Justice Thomas says we're allowed to do, present them to the fact finder here. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Your Honor, with respect to the introduction of what are they're calling inconsistent theories, the U.S. versus Ganado Negro case addressed that specifically, that some courts recognize that while due process may prevent the prosecution from presenting inherently factually contradictory theories in different trials, there are those circumstances where there are evidentiary disputes about responsibility for a crime, for example, among several defendants. And in the Ganado Negro case, the court specifically recognized where there are cases where there are multiple defendants, as long as the prosecution doesn't present false evidence or facts that are inconsistent, they can present theories that are different. And that's essentially where what the Ganado Negro case held. With regard to the admission of Ms. Morrissey's statements, Your Honor, we would be creating a trial within a trial. We would respectfully ask, now, while the court is correct, federal case law has noted that statements by a prosecutor in previous trials may be admissible as admissions by a party opponent. The state, I would submit to this court, is different, and this court can exclude those statements. This would be essentially Ms. Morrissey having to defend her previous statements. We're going to be doing essentially a trial within a trial, and we'd ask that the court exclude any statements made by Ms. Morrissey. And if I may just have a moment, Your Honor, I think I can pull that case that the court was referencing. But under Ganado Negro, the state should not be bound to the exact same theory of prosecution that it followed in the Gutierrez trial. This is a different trial. The facts are slightly different as they relate to this defendant's culpability. Unless the court has any questions, Your Honor.
No, I want to find that. It can be dispositive on other issues, but I want to find that case. I should have just pulled it.
Your Honor, if I may?
Yes.
Two things. As a precaution, if Your Honor would like to reserve on the issue, we can take a look at the case. You can hear a few minutes of additional argument after we've read it. That might be prudent, respectfully. Mm-hmm. Number two, you heard Ms. Johnson say, it's going to be a trial within a trial. It's three statements, four statements. The state made them. You just heard her say that the case law allows us to introduce the contradiction. She didn't cite a single case saying otherwise. She said it allows that. They've admitted that. Due process aside, that's the Gardnegro case that she cites. If they want to present an inconsistent theory, then obviously we reserve and preserve the due process issue. But if they want to raise an inconsistent theory, then by all means, Justice Thomas says they can do that in his view. But you're allowed to show that it's a contradiction from what they said before.
All right, thank you. Well, that doesn't mean the court has to, so we'll take a look at that. You could find that, and it was Justice Chavez. All right. Okay, we're on. Steve. Okay, state's motion in limine 7 to prohibit use or testimony of OHSB summary of investigation.
We have attached as an exhibit the summary of investigation that it seems clear that the defense would like to have admitted as an exhibit. So I want to address two issues. One, should the summary of investigation be admitted as an exhibit? And two, should the findings, which I would argue are legal conclusions, be allowed in as testimony? So we've got the summary of investigation. Is hearsay. The public records exception to hearsay was never intended to permit something like the summary of investigation to be admitted as an exhibit because it contains legal conclusions. It's actually findings and conclusions. That's what they call it. It contains legal conclusions. It is based on a law enforcement investigation. That's all OSHA does. OSHA enforces the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And in addition to that, the summary of investigation, as you can see, has numerous instances of hearsay within hearsay. And while the defense responded and said Ms. Morrissey hasn't pointed any of those things out to the court, well, they're all highlighted in the attachment. So yes, it's true, I didn't cut and paste everything from the attachment into my motion in limine, understanding that we do have page limits that the court has been concerned with. I can pull up the exhibit, and I can certainly go through all of the different quotes where OSHA investigators say they actually put people's statements in quotes during the investigation. So that's hearsay within hearsay, those quotes don't come in. The findings and conclusions
are legal conclusions, so those don't come in because we can't have the jury hearing that Mr. Montoya and Mr. Genoway came to these conclusions because it's going to cause the jury to think that they now have to come to the same conclusion. The problem with the OSHA report generally is that, one, they didn't do a very complete investigation, and I outlined very specific instances of where their investigation fails. And in addition to that, every time I read the OSHA summary of investigation, I say to myself, what is the relevance of this? What does this have to do with the case against Mr. Baldwin? And I want to put kind of in perspective, admitting not only the report, but testimony about the report is like let's say we're having a DWI trial, and it's a jury trial, and the jury gets to hear about the MVD revocation hearing. That's kind of what this is, only the MVD revocation hearing would actually be arguably more relevant and possibly more admissible than the OSHA, because OSHA is not concerned largely with the conduct of individuals. As you can see, Judge, the OSHA report basically says Hannah Gutierrez didn't do anything wrong. Well, we know Hannah Gutierrez did something wrong. We did an entire trial about it, and a jury convicted her in 2 hours. So it has nothing to do with the charges against Mr. Baldwin. Now, having said that, can the state or the defense call these witnesses that were interviewed by OSHA, put them up on the witness stand? Mr. Halls was interviewed. Mr. Baldwin was interviewed. Ms. Gutierrez was interviewed. Numerous witnesses were interviewed. Can we call them and put them up on the witness stand and then refresh or impeach them with the statements that they gave to OSHA? Absolutely, as long as the testimony that they're giving in the witness stand is relevant to the issues in this case. And I'll tell you, on its face, I don't disagree with the findings of OSHA. OSHA found that Rust Productions was responsible under the New Mexico Health and Safety Act for allowing this hazard to be happening on this workplace. I completely agree with them. That doesn't have anything to do with whether or not Mr. Baldwin is guilty of manslaughter. The other thing that I want to point out is the defense wants to do this thing where they, Judge, they don't want you to allow us to bring in anything about Mr. Baldwin being a producer. But what's critical about the OSHA report is the OSHA report says it was the fault of the bosses. It was the fault of the producers. So if the OSHA report gets to be discussed and we get to hear testimony from Mr. Genoway and Mr. Montoya about the fact that this death was the fault of the producers, then we absolutely at that point get to point out that he's one of them. And he was in a position where he got to do whatever he wanted because he was a producer. So if the court is going to prevent us from raising the issue of Mr. Baldwin being a producer, and I respect the court's ruling, absolutely, then the OSHA decisions can't be discussed because they go directly to the fact that he's a producer, and that will open up this this issue that I've had with Mr. Montoya in the past, where Mr. Montoya came up with this kind of fake notion of Mr. Baldwin's a producer, but he's not really responsible for anything other than creative. And Mr. Montoya came to that conclusion because he never looked at the contract and he just talked to Mr. Baldwin. When you look at the contract, and I put the language in our response, or I'm sorry, in my motion, he's absolutely a full producer. There are no limitations on his role as a producer. The language in the producer contract says he is expected to fulfill all of the duties traditionally known by movie producers. It doesn't say there's any restriction at all. So we've got some difficulty here because if they want it in, then producer comes in. If it stays out, producer stays out. So I would ask the court to look at it in that way. If OSHA comes in, the fact that he's a producer becomes highly relevant at that point in time. Thank you. Thank you.
three quick points, Your Honor. Number one, we've cited cases saying it's admissible. 8038C says if it's a criminal case, there's a factual finding, and it's a legally authorized report, it comes in under the hearsay exception. We've cited cases on that. Number two, Jorgensen, their expert witness who's going to testify under Your Honor's ruling as to the safety.
He's not an expert witness.
Jorgensen?
He's going to just testify about guidelines. He doesn't get to provide an opinion.
Your Honor, Jorgensen has no factual knowledge of the rest set. What he.
Jorgensen is the guy with the said guidelines, right?
That's right.
So I rule that he gets to testify about the said guidelines, but he doesn't get to provide an opinion about the safety.
Correct, Your Honor. And one of the issues is that, and we may use it or we may not, but when he was asked at his pretrial interview, what did you do to prepare for giving your opinion? He said, well, I didn't talk to anybody, some hearsay. I read the OSHA report a lot because he's an OSHA guy. That's his background. And so to the extent we think it's necessary to raise that, then that would be the limited context. Ultimately, because it's admissible and because it may relate to their witness, we may have to raise it. And so that's the context in which it could come up. Number three, just for clarity, the report didn't say the producers are responsible. It said Rest Productions LLC, that's one person's company, is the employer. And the employer, not Alec Baldwin, the employer is the one that is being fined under that report. And so there's a very big difference between saying Rust Productions is responsible for violating these OSHA rules and saying that Alec Baldwin is a producer and he had a contract with Rust Productions and therefore he's responsible. That's not at all what the report said. So these are not linked in the way that Ms. Morrissey described. Nothing further, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Court makes the following ruling. I already ruled that producer liability or whatever does not come in. So this OSHA report is specifically prepared by OSHA to go in and investigate whether the employer had any responsibility, and they were in fact fined. If that testimony comes in by oral and including written, then you have opened the door to producer. And with respect to you saying that the only reason why we may bring it up is because Jorgensen may mention it, Jorgensen's not going to mention it because I already said only safety guidelines. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so that's granted. I want to keep track of my omnibus order.
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.